Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Fight fans, welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Coming off the heels of another great fight here in 2019, it went down at Madison Square Garden. It was Triple G edging out Sergey Derevchenko in a fight of the year contender. Joining us on the show today, he called the fight for DAZN. He is Sergio Mora. He will break down the fight in depth as well as some of the fights that are upcoming. Usyk is fighting this weekend. We also have Canelo and Kovalev, and finally AJ and Ruiz just right around the corner. Let's jump right into this interview. We touch on a lot of topics. Here it is, Sergio Mora. Our next interview on Inside Boxing Live is brought to you by Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located just a few steps away from Madison Square Garden and Times Square. Go into Jack Doyle's for all your entertainment needs. From happy hours to birthday parties to private events, Jack Doyle's has you covered. Once again, that's Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located on 240 West 35th Street. This past Saturday night, we saw one of the greatest fights of 2019. It was Gennady Golovkin going up against Sergey Derevchenko, fight of the year contender. A man calling the action for DAZN joins us right now. He is Sergio Mora. Sergio, a really good fight Saturday night, competitive back and forth stuff. Your biggest takeaway from that main event Saturday night from the Garden?
Wow, that was it. When it ended, I wanted more, but I wanted a clear and decisive winner, which we didn't get, but we got a winner. I didn't want to see a draw. And I said something about no one wins in a draw, and people are quick to, you know, criticize every fucking word that comes out of my mouth. Sorry if I can't cuss.
No, I lie. You can let it fly.
What I mean by no one wins in a fight, I'm not talking about the fighters alone. I'm talking about the fans in attendance, the viewers watching, the network who are already promoting the next event for the A side. There's no clear and decisive winner. It's like in chess when you have a draw or I don't know the real technical term for it, but a stalemate. There you go. Mm-hmm. When there's a stalemate in chess, it's like nobody wins and you leave. You're not satisfied and you want more. At least we didn't get that at the Garden. We got a winner. Now some people, including myself, felt Derevchenko deserved the decision, and now that we've all processed it, the majority of boxing writers and scribes and professionals and people in the business, they agreed with me. But then, of course, you have, like, you know, the people online on Twitter saying, I don't know what I'm seeing. I don't know what I'm talking about. And I don't know this. I don't know that. But I'm glad that the professionals, the ones that do this for a living, you guys all had it slightly in Derevchenko's part, because so did I.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the club of getting criticized on Twitter. It's nothing new for us, nothing new for anyone in media, especially in boxing, such a subjective sport. A lot of things went into this fight and a lot of storylines, and we'll get to the fight. But firstly, I want to ask you, as being an ex-fighter, there were some rumblings about, well, you might be a current fighter, so I'll touch on that as well. But getting into was Triple G sick? You know, Eddie Hearn kind of confirmed that he was, and even Jonathan Banks said he described his sickness in the week as horribly bad, quote-unquote. Being an ex-fighter, how much stock can we put into him being sick, and how tough is it? Have you ever fought while under the weather?
Yeah, I fought sick two times, and I've canceled about three fights due to sickness. It's horrible, and look, The last thing you want to do after a great performance is take away from the fighter that showed courage. And both of them showed amazing courage. But the one that showed resilience and a little bit more was Derevchenko, because he had to survive a knockdown, getting hurt, being bloodied from the entire fight. I mean, it was like a Rocky movie. And I've been there too, where you can't see because of the blood, where you're not feeling it. It's not just one of your – it's one of those days where you just – you're a little bit behind, but you know that your opponent's getting tired. You know you're getting the best of it. You know, I mean, you're not getting the best of it, but you know that he's he's tiring and he's slowing down and he's saying, why is this guy still here? And there's something to hunger there. And I think Derevchenko was a hungry one. And we could talk about Golovkin thinking ahead. He wanted the Canelo fight. He wanted something different. He was sick. He was Jonathan Banks, whatever it is. I am going to say this, Dan. In the fighter interview, he looked sick. He really did. Now, I didn't want to say that before the fight because, fuck, I'm not Nostradamus. I don't know if he's sick or not. And even if I ask him if he's sick, he's not going to tell me he's sick. I remember the times where I was sick. I had slight fevers, and they would say, so how do you feel? Mm-hmm. I would say, I feel good, man. I'm ready. I'm good. It was a lie. I'm lying through my teeth. I feel like shit. I'm hoping I feel good tomorrow. That's what I meant, but I don't feel good. I have a slight fever. I have my body's aching. I'm going to rest all day hoping I can fight tomorrow. I've been there, done that. Can I take stock in what he said? Yes, because the way he looked at the fighter meeting. But do I want to do it? No, because it was an amazing fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't know how to properly judge what we saw from Golovkin on Saturday night. You don't want to make up excuses. You don't want to just talk about his performance to take away from what Derevchenko did. But if he was sick, you know, that's not the, you know, he's not putting his greatest effort forward. You know, he is also 37. He's been in a lot of war, so a lot went into it. But we're seeing something in the last 2 weeks, going back to Spence Porter and now this fight on Saturday night, and that's where the guy who lost has coming out almost better than the guy who won. We're talking more about, you know, Derevchenko's effort, talking more about Porter's effort than, you know, the A-side who won the fight. Are you seeing that as well?
A little bit, yeah. I did not as much as this last fight. I think Derevchenko deserved it more than Porter, but I think Porter's effort was just equally as courageous as Derevchenko's. Now the fans, they have their own take. When I was there at Porter Spence, and I thought Spence won unanimously. That's the thing. I thought it was a unanimous decision. It was a very close, entertaining fight of the year candidate. And I can't wait to watch it again on television, and then I'll bring out my paper and pen and judge it round by round. But being there and the emotion and what I'm seeing, I had Errol Spence narrowly ahead, but decisively. Now, when it came to Derevchenko and Golovkin, I couldn't feel that way. And, yeah, I mean, I'm calling the fight, but I'm still there. I'm watching the little shots. I'm watching how they're getting hurt. I didn't feel that way in this fight. That was just a give and take. Back and forth, and there was a lot more drama in Derevchenko Golovkin. You know, there was a tug of war with Spence and Porter, but there was no real drama. You know, there was only one knockdown towards the end, but there was no cut. You know, Spence, we've never really seen him hurt. If Porter would have hurt Spence to the body, that would have been drama. It's like, okay, how does Spence handle that? There's a lot of things that go into the difference between the both fights. They were both excellent, amazing fights. But the drama that came behind the Golovkin fight, and now we're adding sickness, we're adding the change of trainers, the lack of focus. I mean, these are all curveballs thrown into the drama.
Well, they call it what? The big drama show. So it was a big drama show on Saturday. What impressed you the most about Derevchenko?
His game plan, and how he followed it from beginning to end. I knew exactly what Andre Rozier had laid out for him. And it's not that I knew that what he had to do and he was doing it. And that I was reading interviews of what Andre Rozier, and he wasn't really telling you what they were going to do. He was just really close-lipped about it, but they were very confident. They're saying, I don't want to hear about Golovkin being 37 years old. I don't want to hear about him going through wars. And at the end, when we beat him, we want our credit. And he's right. He's right. So I don't want to take away nothing from it. I want to add to Rozier's game plan and Derevchenko's strategy and how they followed it from the third round all the way to the 12th. And that was inside fighting, backing up Golovkin, out-jabbing Golovkin. I don't know if he out-jabbed him, but he out-punched him. And every time he got hit, he came back with two or three shots, which is one of the hardest things to do in boxing. They teach you to do that. But when you're getting hit by a monstrous puncher like Golovkin, you think twice about it because you think about defending instead of attacking. But Derevchenko, it wasn't like that. He knew he had to punch twice the amount of times that Golovkin had to punch. And with a power puncher, one of the highest power knockout artists in boxing, for him to do that, for 12 rounds, for half an hour, 36 minutes, he had to do that, you know, fighting a cut and fighting injury. It's just impressive, man. It's resilience at its best, and that's why, as a fighter, I have to judge all that. I've been cut. I know what he's going through. I know how hurt he feels. I know how tired he is. And I'm looking at body language. I'm seeing how the momentum shifting. By the fourth or fifth round, I remember telling Brian Kenny, I go, look at how Golovkin's gasping for air. Like, he's breathing in and out, like, really heavily, like, consecutively. Like, in one round, he did it three times where he's like.
Yep. I did see that too.
That's not only because he's tired. That's frustration building up. That's like, wait a minute, this guy was supposed to be out already. And another thing, one of the worst things to do is knock down your opponent early in the fight, because you really feel you're going to stop him. And sometimes you overexert yourself trying to stop him, and then you got 30 more minutes of fighting, and that throws you mentally and physically sometimes as well. I don't think that was the case with Golovkin, but maybe a little tiny bit.
Yeah, I've read that too. I've read that, you know, early on, he probably, you know, thought the fight was over after that first round. I mean, sitting ringside, I thought that this was going to be an easy night for Golovkin. With, you know, maybe Derevchenko has never tasted a power like that. But you brought up the corner, and you brought up Andre Rozier and Jonathan Banks, and that's another storyline from this fight. And I went back and watched it on DAZN just this morning. And I think it was the down the stretch, people were criticizing Jonathan Banks for a lack of urgency. I think a lack of urgency from both corners, really, because going into the 11th, 12th round, the fight was up for grabs. I didn't really see too much of what can be criticized from Jonathan Banks. Being around Jonathan Banks, he's not someone that's going to yell. He's not someone that's going to scream. He's a really laid-back guy, and no one knows their fighter better than their own trainer. Did you think that maybe he should have gotten to the face of Golovkin entering that 12th and final round? Because when I went back and watched it, you know, he was just soft-spoken, and I guess some people took that as him lacking urgency.
No, I have the same problem with my trainer. I even stopped talking to him for a year after the Shane Mosley fight because there was no lack of urgency or him yelling at me or shaking me up. And he told me the same thing. He's like, motherfucker, I never yelled at you. I never shook you up in training or in the fight. That's not our chemistry. For 23 years I've known you, I've never had to do that to you. We have this agreement. We know what we need. You know when you're falling behind. You know when I'm telling you, Sergio, you're not doing this. And he was right. And I had to apologize. And that's the same thing with Jonathan Banks. You're not going to hear him yelling. That's not his style. Even in interviews, he's real cool. He's very smart. He's very articulate. Some fighters like that, and some fighters like and need that military type of training and sergeant like talking. I don't dig that. I don't think Golovkin digs that. Did he? Maybe I haven't seen the fight, but maybe he could have said, hey, we need this final round to win.
He did say that, but he just didn't yell it. He didn't Teddy Atlas him. He didn't say we're firemen. He said, you know, we need this round, and I know you can give it to me, but he said it in Jonathan Banks style.
That's all Jonathan Banks had to do. Then he did his job. People just want to criticize every single fucking thing when the train starts derailing a little in the wrong direction. It's not just the trainer's fault, man. Golovkin knows how to fight. He knows how to fight. He knows what to do. It's just your body starts betraying you at a certain point in time. And let's not just say it's the age. We've got to give Derevchenko credit because he stuck through the game plan. And Golovkin has never seen that. Well, he has seen, but he's never really seen that type of aggression and counterpunching and resilience until, like, in the last couple of fights. Jacobs showed him that, Canelo showed him that, and now Derevchenko showed him that. So, you know, he's fighting the best of the best. He's going to get that.
Yeah. With that being said, though, now this is the second fight with Banks and Golovkin. I haven't seen much of a difference in Golovkin. You know, there was a lot of talk that he was going to use more movement. But that's not the type of fighter that Golovkin is. Do you think there's anything that he can shake up? Are you surprised at all about how Golovkin fought on Saturday night in terms of the relationship between Banks and Golovkin?
No, man. Let's just take Jonathan Banks out of the equation. I don't think he has anything to do with this. This has everything to do with Golovkin and the decisions he made. It was his decision. And it was a business decision to cut Abel Sanchez out of the corner. I think that's well publicized now. And now he's living with that decision. He wanted he's a businessman now. He's a promoter. He's a businessman. He you know he He has a lot of side gigs now, and he's still one of the best boxers in the world. And he made the decision to put Jonathan Banks, an excellent trainer, in his corner. If the chemistry hasn't developed yet, and he's getting criticism for it, well, guess what, man? Bosses get criticized every time things change. And Golovkin just has to be criticized and understand that's what comes with the territory of being a boss and a decision maker. That's it.
Now, moving forward with Golovkin, would you favor – I'm going to throw some names out here, and you tell me if you would favor him in these fights. Triple G versus Demetrius Andre. Would you favor Triple G in that fight?
I don't favor anybody against Demetrius Andre. I just think he gives everyone problems. He's just the huckleberry of the division, and that's the reason no one mentions his name. He has and does everything every boxer just dreads. He's a tall, strong, confident, undefeated southpaw with an amateur pedigree and an Olympian.
Yeah.
No.
How about Jermall Charlo?
Yes. See, that's a yes. He is strong, very confident. He can sell a fight. People know him. He's a power puncher, but he has his problems defensively. You know, he can be hit. He can be, you know, rocked. He can be hurt. But he's gonna sell a fight. It's not like you're giving up too much to fight this guy. So there's a lot that comes with beating a guy like that. So Charlo, yes, but an Andre, I mean, it's just different. You know, little by little, he's starting to get, you know, his foot in the door, but Charlo already is in the door.
Okay, now BJ Saunders, let's say BJ Saunders goes back down to 160. It's the only way he can get the fight with Triple G. Would you give Triple G the favor over BJ Saunders?
No, see, I would have to edge out Saunders at this point because of the movement. But I don't know how Saunders is going to take a punch because he's bound to take a big punch. So, you know, it could all change there in the middle rounds when he starts getting cornered and he starts getting hit to the body and he finally gets caught. But I would still favor Saunders' legs, activity, movement, and his courage too, man, because he's shown that he could be resilient as well, and he's not afraid. He's been there with one of the biggest middleweight punchers in Lemieux, and he embarrassed him. And he takes that confidence to a 37-year-old Golovkin. I would favor BJ Saunders.
Okay, now finally, with Canelo Alvarez, obviously, I don't think it's safe to say that you would favor Canelo in that fight. I think a lot of fight fans and media would right now. But let's say Triple G does get the fight with Canelo. How, at this stage, from what you saw from Golovkin and how he's progressing at this age, how does he beat Canelo at this point?
I don't think he does anymore.
But if he was to, how would you see it going down?
Wow. Canelo's too fast, man. Too fast, too explosive. And his head movement has been getting better and better. And Golovkin, you know, they say that his head movement has been getting better. You know, he wants to fight behind the jab a little bit more. He didn't fight behind the jab. He didn't move his head for this last fight as much. He was going for the kill, and he almost got it. With Canelo, he's been improving defensively with the jab. He backed up Golovkin in that second fight. And I could only imagine him getting the confidence to do it again in the trilogy in the third fight. I just don't see Golovkin keeping up with Canelo for 12 rounds this time around. He's bound to get broken down. You know, that's where age and familiarity comes into question. And I'll have to favor Canelo, and maybe even Canelo like really laying into him in the later rounds where Golovkin really will be in trouble. That's the way I would see it.
No, I agree with you there. I think a lot would agree with you too, but have to be like Golovkin would have to almost go for the kill early on. He would have to be super aggressive, which would play right into the hands of Canelo being such a slick counterpuncher. But Canelo coming up November 2nd against Kovalev, really intriguing fight. You'll be on the call for that one as well. I mean, what's the path of victory for Canelo going up against a big puncher and a bigger guy in Sergey Kovalev?
Well, we just talked about, you know, head movement, speed, counterpunching. Kovalev is going to be the bigger, taller, stronger fighter. And, you know, Canelo is going to be able to match power and size with him. So he's going to have to rely on speed and defense. And once he gets inside, which he will, we're going to see him get inside. We all know what the bullseye is, that body. You know, Andre Ward softening up that body. And I love to say this line, the body, once you're hurt, a man to the body has a great memory of pain. They'll remember right away. So it's just going to take one shot for your body and that pain to come back, and then that's when you start to really question yourself as a fighter, and it's fight or flight. And if Kovalev decides to fight, well, he's going to open up himself more, and then that's when Canelo can have the opportunity for the stoppage. We have seen Kovalev get stopped before. And once a fighter gets stopped, it's in the back of his head. The second time around would only be easier. It's just all these things you have to take into effect, and then add the age, add all the things that come with being a aging champion. And Canelo is just too much, too strong, too explosive, and that's why he's taking this huge risk, because it is still a risk, but that's why he's taking a calculated risk.
Now, this is the fight season on DAZN. There are some really good fights upcoming. Which fight out of remaining on the schedule that you'll be calling are you most looking forward to?
The one that I'm most looking forward to is the heavyweight rematch with Ruiz and Joshua, because that's going to be interesting. We're going to see if Joshua could, you know, regain the title, and how does he do it? And Ruiz, he's just going to have more time to train. He's going to have more time to strategize and more time to really think about, like, all the money he could potentially make with one more win. I mean, this can change, you know, generations of the Ruiz family. So, yeah, I mean, that's the moment that I'm waiting for. But as far as fight goes as a boxer, I'm looking forward to Regis Prograis and Josh Taylor, man. I just think two of the best 140-pounders are fighting, and stylistically, they're going to mesh well. That's a fight I'm really looking forward to.
Are you calling that one?
As a boxer, yeah, I'll be calling that one.
Okay, yes, I know the World Boxing Super Series, sometimes they use a different crew, but that's...
No, I'm sorry. I'm not calling that
one.
You're right.
I didn't think so.
It's a DAZN fight, but that's World Series of Boxing. I'm sorry.
Are you looking forward to that flight to Saudi Arabia?
Well, of course. You know, I mean, we're going there for the rematch. Everyone that's been there from DAZN and people that have been there and come back saying, man, don't worry about it. It's a great place. Okay. People treat you well. You know, everything you hear is just embellished. You're going to have, you know, it's going to be fine. Just, you know, follow the rules. So everywhere you go in the world, there's rules. Follow the rules and you'll be all right.
Well, that's easier said than done when you're going out with Todd Grisham. What is that going to be like? Well, Todd Grisham? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. So I'm going to have to stay away from Todd Grisham. My trip to Saudi Arabia, I'm not even going to look at Todd. No, you're right. I got to stay away from him.
Well, you actually might have to, like, be a chaperone. I feel like you keep him in line, because I can see him, you know, getting out of control. He ends up in the middle of the desert, you know.
No
cell reception out there.
I'll be guilty by association. No, I'm staying away. I'm staying in opposite hotels. I'm staying opposite floors. I'm probably going to want to be on the opposite side of the ring when I'm calling the fights with them, because, I don't want to be associated with any shenanigans.
Shenanigans, that's the proper word with Todd Grisham. But, Sergio, thank you so much for coming on. Really exciting times in the world of boxing coming up, especially on DAZN. Some really big fights are coming up. We'll catch up to you soon at ringside. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Big fights, any device, one prize.
I like
big
that.
Big fight season.
Special thanks to our guest, Sergio Mora, for joining us here on Inside Boxing Live. Great insights to the fight we saw this past weekend. Upcoming on the schedule this weekend, Alexander Usyk back in the ring making his heavyweight debut. We'll see what he has in store. Of course, if he wins that, he is the mandatory for the winner of AJ and Ruiz, so keep an eye on that. Big fights coming up in October. We will be back in studio in a week from now talking more big boxing. You've been watching Inside Boxing Live.